So we are in chapter 1.2, generalized random graphs. So we started a little bit last Tuesdays. So we are interested in graphs with arbitrary equidistributions. Let us call it P of K, our degree distribution. So we want to construct graphs which are as random as possible. So for every 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on, degree k, we give a certain, for example, if you have not isolated sites, we have this one 0, we have a certain degree p of k. So that is a number, actually the distribution of degrees. The number of is then, of course, n times p of k is a number of sites with a certain degree, if it gives a distribution p of k. And as I said last time, in principle, this can always be constructed, but in practice, there are quite a few problems if you want to do that by yourself. So if you have this example here, we have, let's say here we have 1 and we here have 2. So we have 2 sides with degree k. So we have, we draw 2 sides with stubs. They are denoted here stubs because they're not really a fully developed connection. One side with degree 1, and one side with degree 3, and then we connect. But of course, for example, if you would, for example, do this one here, connecting randomly, that would not work out because you would have a double connection, which is not allowed. So when you do your random connections, you have always to see whether one side is already connected, and then you are not allowed to do that. And then you can connect like that, and you have a graph. But of course, if you look at this in a practical way, sometimes it can be a problem because, for example, you could have the following issue that you first connect everything, and then you have 2 sides and you're forced to do a double connection, stuff like that. And then you have to see that you first connect sides with high degrees and then you connect sides with lower degrees. So doing that in practice is a little bit more complicated, but in principle can be done. Then you have can iterate over all possible connections. Also, ensemble realization. And so we will do a few calculations with these kind of distributions. And of course, we then define, as always, the coordination number, the average degree k. So this here is very often the symbol for expectation value. That is sum over k. K and PK. Now, what we would like to do is calculating the percolation threshold. So what we would like to do is to see which discrete distribution or which are the properties of the discrete distribution such that on the average for very large systems, everything is either fully connected or whether they are, on the average, subclusters which are not connected. And this transition between a fully connected graph and a graph which is partly connected is percolation transition. And that is, of course, the fundamental properties of all real-world functioning graph, because a graph which is percolating, so we can go from every side to every other side, is of course completely different than a graph which is not percolating, since you cannot exchange information in any other things. So in order to look at the percolation problem, we will do that in two steps. One is relatively easy, hand waving, and the next step will be more mathematically rigorous. We start with a given side, that's denoted A, and from that side, we go to its neighbors. Let's denote them B sides. And then we go on from the neighbors further on. And what we want to do is to calculate the number of sides I can reach. If the number of sides I can reach is finite, the graph is not percolating. Because, of course, I try to examine the percolation limit in the thermodynamic limit, because then where this makes sense. So what we like to determine is first in hand waving, an intuitive argument, how is the number of sides grow. In order to do that, we need the distribution of these B sides. So we need the distribution of outgoing links from B sides, that means from neighbors. So what we have is pk, the distribution of the degree of any given side. But now, if you go from one side to another side and you want to see which is the distribution of outgoing links, so these are the distribution of these dashed lines, not going back, it's a slightly different distribution. We will call this distribution qk, or it is also denoted excess degree distribution. So qk is the distribution of these outgoing links. And how does it look like? Well, the number of links are emerging is just the normal degree B of the number of links emerging, the dashed lines, is just the normal degree of this side minus 1, of course. So that means Q of k minus 1, because we have one link less, is proportional to pk. But now I have also to see how probable is it to reach a side which is degree k. Well, this is also proportional to k. Why is that? Because if the side B has, let's say, only two links, then the probability I link with the side is proportional to 2. If the side B has many links, let's say 10, then the probability to link it to it from A is much higher, namely 5 times higher. So the probability that I reach a side which degree k is proportional to k, to the degree of the side. So that means if I normalize these two probability functions, probability relations, qk minus 1 is k times pk, and I just have to normalize that because it's a distribution function, so I just sum over all j, j pj. This is just a normalization constant, so that the sum over all qk is 1. It's a distribution. So that is the excess degree distribution. It is very much related to pk, but it's slightly different. Of course, this is p of k minus 1. We because I go outside, I have one outgoing link less, and I can just do it the other way around. Then it's pk is sum over k plus 1, pk plus 1, divided by the same normalization. Let's call it, let's say this LPL, LPL. So that is our excess degree distribution. And now we can calculate the number of next nearest neighbors. So we know the number of B sites, and now we can calculate the number of C sites, namely the number of next nearest neighbors, one step further on. And that is just the expectation value of the excess degree distribution of next nearest neighbors. It is the expectation value of the excess degree distribution. So this is just the sum over k, k, qk. That is the expectation value. So this is then just putting up this formula here. 1 over the normalization, sum over L, L, P, L, sum over K, K, K plus 1, P, K plus 1. Or if I change notation here, so change the index, that is sum over L, L, P, L, sum over K, k minus 1, k, pk, but just changing from k to k minus 1 as a summation index. And this one, actually, I could have written it immediately. This is just the expectation value of k, or the degree, because sum over L, pl is the average degree, so the coordination number, expectation of k. So this is nothing else than 1 over k. And if I multiply that out, I get the expectation value of k squared minus the expectation of k, which is the average degree k. So we use a general notation. Actually, we denote this by z2 here. So we say so we denote with zm the number of the m's nearest neighbors. That means z0 equals 1. That is just z1 is the next nearest neighbor. That is just k, or in the average z. And z2, now I made here an error. That is not exactly the number of next nearest neighbor here, because that is the expectation value of outgoing degree of the outgoing links from one B site, and I have to multiply that by the number of B site. So Z2 is Z1 times this value here. Divided by K. Now, z1 is z, so that means that z2 is just the numerator k squared minus k expectation value. And now we can, of course, would like to know how large is Z2. And now this depends on the graph. And the first thing to do is, further on, we will do it for generalized graphs. But let's just calculate as a side remark Z2 for Erdős-Rényi graphs. Well, I know the expectation value. So there, my degree distribution, pk, is e to the minus z, z to the power k divided by k factorial, that is the Poisson distribution, which gives, of course, that expectation value of the degree is z. And now I have to calculate the expectation value of k squared. So or Z2 directly, Z2 is sum over k equals 0 to infinity, k squared, e to the minus z, z to the power k, k factorial minus z. I just can do it here. This is k minus 1 factorial, k. I can just
reduce.
And then I write it in the following way. I take 1 z outside, this is z, e to the minus z, times sum over k, and here I write it as k minus 1 plus 1, because that's the same, z to the power k minus 1 divided by k minus 1 factorial minus z. And now you see I can do here the plus 1 and the minus 1. Then I have here, this is nothing else than z times, I think I write it out because e to the minus z, sum over k, k minus 1, z, k minus 1 to k minus 1 factorial, minus, now this one is just the sum over all exponentials, so this is just, give me 1, because this is just the definition of the exponential function. So minus 1, plus 1, this plus 1 minus z. Then I see this plus 1 minus 1 cancels. Then this is just the expectation value of the average degree. So this gives me just z2 equals z squared. Which is not so much surprising because it's the most random graph. So if I have z neighbors and it's a completely random, I have no probability whatsoever changing of how do I link, then the number of next nearest neighbors is just z squared because I do it twice. But this is only for the Erdős-Rényi graph and not for all graphs, yeah?
How with this formula do you prevent double counting of next nearest neighbors?
So that I'm not going back here. This one is not this one.
If they are connected, the next nearest neighbors to be connected.
So these ones.
Yeah, these ones to be identical.
Yeah, I don't prevent that, because for very large n on small connection probabilities, these double countings, as we showed for the for the cluster coefficients are proportional to 1 over n. So actually, with higher order roots, they're actually even smaller. So the closest triangle is 1 over n, higher orders are even smaller. So this is a hand-waving argument, so mathematically not rigorously, but if I would do some more mathematics, then this double counting vanish in the thermodynamic limit n going to infinity. But they are not vanishing for any finite system. So as always, that will happen quite often in this lecture. What you can do once, you can do twice. What you can do twice, you can do 3 times and 4 times and many more times. So we iterate the process. So we calculate the number of faraway neighbors, and so what we have is that Zm equals k squared minus k divided by k expectation value Zm minus 1. Why is that? Because the distribution function qk is the distribution function for the outgoing links of a neighbor. But that's also true if I'm here and I want the distribution function of the next outgoing neighbor, the same qk is still holding. So that this relation of how many outgoing next nearest neighbor I have for one side at every stage still holds. So I have just to multiply with the number of nearest neighboring or far away nearest neighbor I had before, multiply by this factor to get the far away neighbors in the next step. And so this is then a very easy recursion because this is nothing else than Zm equals Z2 divided by Z1 Zm minus 1, because we calculated Z2, the number of next nearest neighbor is this quantity, the numerator, and Z1 is the denominator is a number of nearest neighbor. So this is very nice because I now can calculate all, I have just two quantities, namely the number of nearest neighbor and the expectation value of the number of next nearest neighbor. And that determines everything. And so I do percolating that, I do recursively that. So this is Z2 divided by Z1 to the power m minus 1 Z1. That is hopefully correct. If m is 2, I need 1, yeah. And so then I, of course, have in the limit n going to infinity, the thermodynamic limit, that Zm equals infinity or finite, infinity if Z2 is larger than Z1 and it's going to 0 if Z2 is smaller than Z1. And this is very intuitive because what does it tell you? Namely, it tells you that if you go one step, so this is a number here, the B sides are Z1, the number of nearest neighbor, and the Z sides are Z2. And the result just tells you if you go one step further on and this number of sides does not increase, so if the number of Z sides one is not larger than the number of B sides, you will not percolating. But if they are larger, you will be percolating because increase. So it's a very intuitive result that Z2 must be larger than Z1. And for the Erdős-Rényi graph, of course, that is very easy, because for Erdős-Rényi graph, Z2 over Z1 is Z squared over Z, and that is just Z. And so just say you're percolating whenever you have on the average more than one neighbor. So for Erdős-Rényi, so completely random graph, calculation for Z larger than 1. So now we can calculate one little more thing. Namely, we can rewrite this condition here in a slightly different way. And that is quite interesting. So our condition is that Z2 we do it in the next step. Before I do that, let me first write the total sum. Total number of sites in cluster. So how many sites can I reach from A? This was our original question. Well, I just do the sum. So I do the sum over M, ZM, because that is the total number of sites I can reach. So this is nothing else than Z1 sum over M, Z2 divided by Z1 to the power M minus 1. Going from m actually to 1 to infinity, I can actually go then from 0 by changing that. And this is well known what that is. This is z1 divided by 1 minus z2 over z1. So this is nothing else than z1 squared divided by z1 minus z2. And this is, of course, as you see, if I make have here as a function of, let's say, this is here z1, and I plot that as a function of z2. And if z2 is smaller, that is finite, and finally diverging, when z2 approaches z1, and it's infinite for Z2 larger than Z1. So that's a 1 over power law divergence at the percolation threshold. So that we call then the percolation threshold. And one says that one has a giant connected component, because this is, of course, statistical considerations. It doesn't really mean that every site is with every site connected, because this is statistically in the large N. There can be always a finite fraction of sites which are not connected, because a finite fraction of sites falls out of the statistics. So one speaks of a giant connected, no, with G, a giant connected component. Giant connected component. So it means with probability 1, if you look at two sites, they are connected, but of course there's a finite, so in physics, an intensive number of sites in the thermodynamic limit which are not connected, but in the thermodynamic limit with probability 1, every two sites are connected. But this is, of course, a statistic analysis modulus a finite number of not connected sets. Oops. And the key point is, and we will discuss it more, that this is really a phase transition in the sense of physics. It's no wonder that many physicists have developed theories on percolation, because also in many physical systems, percolations occur. For example, you have an alloy of A and B. Let's say one is iron and the other one is nickel, and you have them on a lattice, iron and nickel. Fa and nickel, and so you have them randomly on the lattice, then you want to see which is the probability, if you have less iron, that you have to form a cluster of iron or nickel and whatever. So in alloy theory, percolation is important because if you have a cluster of one metal, they may be magnetic, or in this case, both are magnetic. But let's say you take, this is probably not an alloy. You have often copper and gold and stuff like that, which you can make nice alloys. Properties where you can have percolation. Or, for example, in conductivity, so you have a system which is insulating, but you have some conducting inclusions. And if these conducting islands are percolating, then the whole system is percolating. Then you conduct current from one side to the other side. If they're not percolating, the whole system is insulating. That is especially important in superconductivity when you have, let's say, inclusions of superconducting patches. If they are connected, you have Josephson-like superconductivity, and so you have zero resistance, even if you have only filament or superconductivity, happens quite often. If they're not percolating, the whole stuff is insulating. So percolation issues are very important also in many realms of physics. So here in terms of network theory, as I was announcing, we can rewrite our condition in a nice way. Namely, the condition is that Z2 over Z1 equals 1, which I can rewrite in a different way. Namely, the condition is that Z2 equals Z1. Now, Z2 was k squared minus k equals k. So I can put it on the other side. The condition of percolation is that k squared minus 2k equals 0. Or if I rewrite them as expectation value, that sum over all k, k times k minus 2, pk equals 0. And now if you look at this condition, that's pretty interesting, because this is 0 for two kind of, so what does not contribute? So sides, isolated sides, have k equals 0. So with k equals 0, they don't contribute to this sum. And sides with k equals 2 also do not contribute. Of course, it's clear that sides with k equals 0 don't contribute because they're anyhow not connected. And sides with k equals 0, 2, well, these are sides which have one ingoing and one outgoing link. So that means either they are connected or they are not connected. But the connectivity of the network doesn't change if you take them out and substitute that. So if you take this network and substitute it by a network like that, so you substitute all sides which k equals 2 by a straight link, the geometry of the graph doesn't change. And since the geometry of the graph doesn't change, they don't contribute to the percolation problem. And of course, you can also take out all isolated sides because they're anyhow not isolated. So that's, of course, intuitively correct, but it also comes out here. Sides which just have k equals 2 don't change or don't have an influence on the geometry of the graph regarding the percolation problem. So here we discuss the normal side percolation, but there are many different ways of percolation. We will not calculate that, but this is just here for mentioning and passing. If you see that in literature, we can also look at percolation of very different quantities. For example, you can look at percolation of communities, very important in social networks, also of percolation, for example, of cliques. Or let's say you are considered this simple link is a simple clique of sides 2, but you could consider, well, I'm actually interested in a social analysis, and I consider every clique to be a component of my social network because these are social tight woven subgraph, and so I'm interested whether these cliques are percolating or not, which is a similar analysis but slightly different, since we are interested whether these kind of cliques are percolating or not. So you can look at quite a few different things in the percolation theory. But here we will restrict ourselves just of the normal percolation of vertices, so whenever vertices are connected. Another thing we can calculate from our calculation, which we already did before intuitively, is the average distance. Because if we have the average size of a cluster, we can also calculate average distances of the vertex. So we denoted it by L, the average vertex distance. That is the same argument we did before in a rough way, a little bit more rigorous, but pretty similar. Namely, we say that L is determined when ZL is of the order of magnitude of the whole graph, which we can, of course, only do if we are above the percolation limit. So that means that that L, that is C2 over Z1 to the power L minus 1 times Z1 is approximately n. Since this is a number of next nearest. We could also use what would give a similar result here. So we just take the logarithm of that, so that we have L minus 1, the log of Z2 divided by Z1 is proportional to the log of n divided by Z1. Or we can then solve for L, then we have L is approximately the log of n divided by C1 divided by log of C2 divided by C1 plus 1. And we have the same small world property as before, namely the scaling with a log. And we didn't make use of that, but this is for any generalized random graph. So this is for any degree distribution given as long as it is a random graph. So for all P of k. So we don't need for this result and for the other result that we have a Poisson degree distribution. We never used the fact that we have a Poisson degree distribution. Only what we need is the first moment and the second moment of the degree distribution. Of course, we can specialize for a Poisson degree distribution, so for R is Rennie, so for R is Rennie or Poisson V of k, then we have L is approximately log of n divided by z, the degree. This was z squared, so log of z squared divided by z plus 1. And we can multiply that out. And then we have that this is log of n minus log of z divided by log of z plus 1. The plus and minus 1 goes away. And so this is just log of n divided by z. And that is exactly what we had also previously for the estimate of the Erdős-Rényi graph. Yeah, the last thing we would like to calculate here, it's also very easy, is the clustering coefficient for a generalized random graph. So how large is...
Yeah?
Log n durch log n durch log z, ja, ich vermute mal, das ist hier falsch und dort oben richtig, ja. Ah, dort, ja. Ja, durch darf man natürlich nicht, minus ja, durch nicht. Klar. Ja. So. So the clustering coefficient is the probability to find triangles. So that means I start with my A side. I go to my B sides, so the nearest neighbor. And the probability that two of them are connected is my clustering coefficient. So that means uh, that this is just well, just to write it down, C equals QI Q KJ, sorry, Q, I just explained it now, divided times N times C. So let me explain that. So let's say this is I and J. So the total number of neighbors I have is N. N divided by D. Okay, so I'm going to side I, and I have, I'm going to look at how many outgoing stops I have. Then the probability that I connect with J is proportional to the number of outgoing stops here, divided that the total number of stops I have in the system. So N times Z is the total number of outgoing links from every side. So, so if I want to connect these two here, I calculate the number of outgoing links, I, then the probability that this has an outgoing links divided by the probability of all stops, that these are the same. And as these are to be calculated in the degree distribution of the nearest neighbor, because both of them are nearest neighbor of A. Yeah? Yeah.
Could we use that sort of two questions? Could we use that sort of approach to calculate this? And secondly, we assume that it will go to zero for large increasing.
Well, it will go to zero because we have this factor 1 over n. Because if you have a random network, this is 1 over n. So as we will see, this clustering coefficient goes to zero. For large n. So in this sense, it's fully consistent. So this is a correction relatively to the thermodynamic limit. So it's the first order correction relatively to n going to infinity. So then this is nothing else than 1 over n times t, sum over k, kqk squared. That is what we calculated before. This was this famous factor, 1 over n times z, k squared minus expectation value k, k, and that everything squared. And so we can multiply that out, because this is just z, k, and so z is just expectation value of k. I can multiply and divide, but it really doesn't matter so much. So it's d divided by n k squared minus k k squared r squared. So now the key point is the following. Or we can calculate that as z2 and z1. So if we calculate that differently, z is the number of nearest neighbor, z1 divided by n. That was the number of next nearest neighbor, z2 divided by z1. I think I'll leave it like that. Yeah, it doesn't matter actually. I can also leave it like that. So the key point is the following, that if the number of nearest neighbors, of next nearest neighbor is very large, which can be, so if z2 is much, much larger than z1, then this factor here can be substantially increased. I think I just multiplied it out, sorry. So this is just z2 squared divided by n z1 to the cubed. So if you look at, for example, Erdős Rényi graph, then z2 was z squared, so for Erdős Rényi, this was then z squared, so z to the fourth, the n divided z to the 3, which is z to the n, which is what we had before for Erdős Rényi, for the clustering coefficient. But in principle, it can be, namely with if you have fat tails, that the number of next nearest neighbors grows substantially faster than just z. And in that case, the clustering coefficient could be pretty big. Of course, it is a 1 over n correction, relatively what you would expect for a completely random graph, Erdős Rényi-like. So that means in the table we used to compare whether a real-world graph, let's say you take a protein interaction graph or a neural network graph, and you measure the clustering coefficient for the real-world graph, let's say which has 1,000 sites, and you compare it with a random graph, you should not compare it with an Erdős Rényi random graph, but you should calculate for this graph z2 and z1, which is very easy. Z1 is just the expectation value, and calculate the clustering coefficient using this formula, and then compare with the measured clustering coefficient, and then say whether it's really bigger or smaller. So because then you use, so you have the degree distribution P of k, which you measure experimentally. You use this degree distribution for calculating your z2 and z1, so which is just expectation value of k and k squared, and calculate the clustering coefficient and compare it with what you measure, and then you say the clustering coefficient is bigger or smaller. So that is the correct way to say whether a graph which you have, which you find, has a high clustering coefficient relatively to a random graph or not. Because a random graph you should compare to is a random graph which has the same degree distribution as a measured one, and not a Poisson discrete degree distribution, which is a degree distribution of the Erdős Rényi graph. So it's not really much work, because it's very trivial to calculate, right? Z2 is just the expectation value of k squared, and z1 is just the expectation value of k, completely trivial to calculate. But that is what one should calculate. So now we will do exactly the same calculation another time, but with a different formalism, namely probability generating function, for two reasons. One, this is an extremely powerful formalism, which we will use quite a few times, to dealing with probability distributions, like the degree distribution. And second time, that these algorithms allows you to go much beyond this analysis, namely to make analysis how does a graph react to perturbations. So you have a graph or a network which is connected, and you take out links, randomly or not randomly, that drives me below the percolation threshold or not. If it drives you taking out a certain percentage of links or of nodes, does it drive you below the percolation network? Then you have been attacked this network successfully. That's what happens if you want to attack the internet. You say, I'm making an attack, and I take out these and these routers randomly. Will the internet traffic collapse because I made it drive it below the percolation threshold, essentially? Or if I do that with an electricity network. Then, of course, you can have either focused attacks, where you take out high-degree nodes, or you took random attacks, and so on. And this you can all then examine very neatly using probability generating functionals. But the first results we will get with this formalism will just repeat these results which we have here. They will not change. They are correct. But the way to calculate that is, of course, also very easy. But since this is the first time, probably most of you have seen probability-generating functionals. Even so, they are very easy. The first time, one needs a few moments to get used to them. So it's better to do a calculation where you already know what is coming out. So we make here just now leaf graphs for a while and just do some general information about probability generating functionals. So generating functional is something very popular in physics. Namely, a generating functional is a functional which generates you a function. So you have some function generally, and you want to generate it from some other functional. Why functional? Because a functional is a function of a function and not a function. So the difference is a function, let's say f of x is something like that, you know. And let's say g of f is a functional of functions. So the arguments are functions that you call a functional normally. So that is a functional. Not everybody does it like that, but most people would use the word functional for this one. And for f, this is a function. So it's pretty standard, not 100% standard. And I mostly will use, it's also pretty standard, Eckige Klammer, square brackets for a functional, but some people also just use normal brackets. So g of f is also very in use. I will try to make this distinction here. Of course, you all know very famous functionals, Lagrange formalism. That is a functional Q of x and v of x, p of x, depending. Oh. And so what we have here is f is a distribution. So our function is a distribution function, some p of k. So the probability to have something, and the probability generating functional G0, actually now it's of x, because it will be a function of x, it's a functional of p of k. It's just very simple, it's a power. Sum over k equals 0 to infinity, you can do that only for discrete p, k, x to the power k. So your function is p of k, you multiply it with x, and x is a real function. So my functional is a real function of x and a functional of p. But I'm not interested in x. X is a dummy variable. It has no meaning. I'm interested always in p to calculate with the distribution. So that is what's confusing at the moment. So x is a dummy variable. So first I do some properties, and then I say, why do I do that? Why, this is an extremely powerful formalism. That will come in a short while. It's very simple, and you will see immediately why. So if it's a functional, I can generate it. So obviously, pk I can get from g0 of x by just taking the derivatives, because it's just a Taylor expansion, k factorial, dk by dk to the power x to 0 of x for x equals 0. For example, if I take x equals 0, right, so p0, of course, is just g0 of 0, because then I have the first term. If I take the first derivative, p1 equals g0 prime or 0, and so on, because that's a Taylor expansion. I have several properties. One is, of course, normalization. G0 of 1 is sum over k pk, and that is of course 1, because my distribution function is normalized. G0 prime of 1, this will be used, these two will be used many times, that is sum over k k pk, because I take the derivative, I get a k. Then I put here 1, so it's always 1. So that is nothing else than expectation value of k, also denoted by z, the average degree. And of course, I can go calculate higher moments. Well, this is actually a degree. Now, which is very important, is the following property. So let's assume, let's say you have, you toss a coin. So pk is defined as following, that p of 0 is, let's say, 1/2, and p of 1 equals 1/2. So your generating function, g0, I will call it, of x, is just 1/2 1 plus x. So this is the two sides of the coin, up and down, or however you want to call it. Now you've tossed two coins. So twice. And what we will have, I will prove it now to you, that the generating function for tossing two coins is just a square. For tossing and calculating the sum, calculating three times is 3, R4 and so tossing n times, this is n statistically independent processes. So this holds only if the second process is independent of the result of the first process. And so how do we prove that? Well, we could do a general proof, but let's make just example here. Well, if you cross two times, your probability is just P2 of 0 is 1/4, because 2 times down, or up in this case, then I have P2 of 1 is 1/2, because I have first probability up down or down up, and P2 of 2 equals 1/4. So my probability generation, let's say call it Z0 of 2, of x is just 1/4 plus 1/2 x plus 1/4 x squared, which is nothing else than 1 plus x half squared. And this makes sense. Why does it make sense? Well, if you look more generically of two processes, let's call them, let's say, P and Q. So you do first a process, let's say, P, and let's say a process P prime, and you add the result, and you do them independently, then your generating functions, if you look at that, the generating function here, sum over k, pk x to the power k times sum over k prime, pk prime, x to the power k prime. And if you multiply that out, you get terms proportional to pk, pk prime, x to the power k plus k prime. So, and this coefficient, of course, you have to now to sum over all powers. So if you look, so you have to now to consider all combination that your total power is the same. So that means this, of course, pk times pk prime is just the probability to have here and result k, and here's the result k prime. And this is proportional to the power k plus prime. But this means that for the cumulative distribution function, let's call the cumulative distribution function capital, that this is the probability proportional, it's one term, to p k plus k prime. Of course, I have not only one term, but I have to make the sum over all terms which have the same power. But that is done by multiplying that out. I get all these terms, and they sum, and they all have the same power. And so that is the reason, the only reason, why these probability generating functions are used so much. Because if you have statistically independent processes, and there are many, many instances where you have that, instead of doing this horrible sum, you just have to multiply two functions. I mean, your probability can be as complicated as you want, but you just have to multiply two functions. Actually, you can do even more complex stuff. I will do it in a short while, more complex stuff. But let's first make some examples of probability generating functions, and then do it in a more complex way, or maybe let's do it the other way around. Yeah, let's do it some more complex stuff first. Let's assume you do the following experiments. Throw a dice or whatever n times. But not always n times. Sometimes you throw it 10 times, sometimes 9 times, sometimes 20 times. With the probability Pn. Yeah. So that means what you have to do is you sum over n Pn, and at every time I have here a g0 of x, my result to the power n. Because if I throw it n time, I have n independent throws. Now, if you denote, let's say, by g1, the probability generating function, let's call it y, for example, equals sum over n pn y to the power n, then this is nothing else than g1 of g0 of x. So something which would be now really very complicated if you wanted to sum up all the terms. I throw the dice n times, but sometimes 10, sometimes 11 times with a certain distribution. To calculate that by hand, all these probabilities and doing these sums is just horrible. And what you have to do here is just you calculate g1 of g0 of x. That's it. And this is really extremely powerful. We will also use this one relation sometimes during this lecture. Of course, this is only true for all independence processes. If there are dependences, for example, you throw it only n times if the result is above 10, otherwise you don't go on, you cannot do that. So, let's make some examples. How do these probabilities generating function look like? The first one is, of course, the Poisson distribution. So then, our g0 of x equals sum over k, pk. Pk is nothing else e to the minus z. Z to the power k, k factorial, x to the power k. This is e to the minus z, sum over k, z times x to the power k, k factorial. So this is e to the minus z, e to the power zx. So this is e to the z1 minus x. X minus 1? Yeah. So it's a very simple exponential decay. Let's consider the another example is the exponential distribution. Pk equals 1 minus e to the minus 1 divided by kappa e to the minus k over kappa. So that is the exponential distribution, e to the minus k divided by kappa. This is a normalization. That's maybe just well, we can calculate the normalization before or afterwards, doesn't matter. So the normalization is that sum over k, let's consider this one here, e to the minus k over kappa, k equals 0 to infinity, that we can write sum over k, e to the minus 1 over kappa to the power k. And so this is just 1 divided by 1 minus e to the minus 1 over kappa. So that's why we have this normalization to make it normalized. And the generating functional is then g0 of x is 1 minus e to the minus 1 over kappa, sum over k equals 0 to infinity, e to the minus 1 k over kappa, x over k. This is, of course, nothing else than e to the minus 1 over kappa times x to the power k. So I have my geometric series. So this is 1 minus e to the minus 1 over kappa divided by 1 minus e to the minus 1 over kappa x. And of course, we could have done it before, we have g0 of 1, which is the normalization, is 1. That is given. Good. And we can also calculate the average. And so what we will also introduce and use a lot the next time, I'm just writing it up now, we will not use it, is of course the generating function, not of our distribution function pk, but also of our distribution function qk. We can calculate the generating function for, or define it at least, for any distribution function which is discrete. It's not possible for continuous variables. We can do that only for discrete variables. And that we will denote always here by g1, the distribution of the nearest neighbor. So we define then g1 of x is sum over k equals 0 to infinity, then qk x to the power k. And now we know what qk is. That is sum over k, k plus 1, p k plus 1, x to the power k, sum over k divided by sum over l, l p l. This is, of course, as usual, 1 over z, the coordination number. Sum over k, k, pk, x to the k minus 1. And this is nothing else than the derivative. So this is 1 over z, g0 of x prime. Because g0 of x was just here the same as the power k. You know, if I take the first derivative, I just get the power k. So this is, of course, a very nice, simple relation that the generating functional of the nearest neighbor degree distributions, the excess degree distribution, just 1 over the number of nearest neighbor times the first derivative of the generating functional of my degree distribution. And so this we will use then to calculate the percolation limit the next time. It's not a difficult calculation. But then we have a formalism which allows us to change the degree distribution. So what happens if we change our pk by taking out some sides and see what happens with our percolation threshold? Yeah, that's it. Thank you.